The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
Thanks to Mike, good afternoon. 7 minutes after 12 midday on Man in Line. Tomorrow, Chief Minister Alfred Cannon will be live on the air. We'll obviously be talking about the government's decision tomorrow to basically subvent electricity and to keep a cap on the cost. So Alfred Cannon, Chief Minister. Tomorrow, Gareth Patchett is here today. The MUA's head of water, lots to talk about, reservoir levels, that hosepipe ban, rainwater harvesting and more. But just a quick word, remember, the roads are going to close around the mountain course in about 20 minutes' time at 1:30. First bike scheduled to get underway about 1:30. They'll reopen no later than 4:30 to allow people to get home, shutting again at 6 tonight for the evening qualifying session. So just be aware of that. Roads will open tonight no later than 9. So roads close 12:30. First bike's away an hour later. Reopen no later than 4:30 to allow you to get home. Shutting at 6 for the evening qualifying session. And roads tonight open no later than 9. Gareth Patchett, head of water at the MUA. It's a big job, Gareth, a head of water.
Yes, thanks for that, Andy. Yes, it is a big job. I've been here since 2013, and I love it here. I love the job.
Okay. What does that... head of water, what does that cover? Well, from reservoir to tap?
Yes. Everything to do with water, but nothing else. So my job is an operational job, so I look after all the guys that mend the bursts in the pipes, right. The guys that look after the reservoirs, and the guys that run the treatment works. And there's... I think at last count there was 80 people in water.
Okay, well obviously the MUA has got electricity, so don't call about electricity. Sewerage, don't call about Miri Vec or anything, or how many sewerage pellets are created a year. We're talking purely about water. And first of all, you know what I'm going to say, hosepipe ban. Not the most popular thing to do, and of course it does rain quite a bit on the Isle of Man. Why a hosepipe ban, Gareth?
Okay, so if we take ourselves back to the middle of July... We were in a heat wave. I know it wasn't as hot here as it was in the UK, but we were definitely in a heat wave. And a lot of people think that the hosepipe ban is something that we've used because we're imminently running out of water. And that isn't the case and wasn't the case then. The problem that we had was that the demand at the time was, we thought, running away with itself almost. So the normal daily demand, and demand is an industry term for the amount of water that all your customers are using. The normal daily demand is around 29 million litres per day. At the height of the heat wave, we were touching 40 million litres per day. And that causes all sorts of problems, but it also made us have to think about what do we need to do to make sure that later in the summer we don't get into a situation where we are short of water? So having a 25% or a 30% increase in demand at a time when there's nothing coming into the reservoirs, so all the rivers coming into the reservoirs bone dry, the reservoirs dropping like a stone. Yes, there was still 60% of water in, but if that had continued, that would have quickly led into a possibly a serious situation. But also the high demand puts a lot of stress on the system, the system that connects the water from the treatment works into everybody's houses, the pipes. So when you have such a situation like that, you start getting bursts, you start getting troubles with reservoirs low, and we really thought we need to think about the risk of such a big demand on the reservoirs and the steep decline in stock, and also to make sure that it didn't keep running away with itself.
Basically. Gareth, why does that risk bursts when demand is going like it's running away with itself?
Well, if you think about flows through pipes, the pipes don't get bigger when they flow and the demand goes up. So you've got 30% more water travelling down the pipes. So water flowing down pipes is energy. You've also got dry ground, which puts a lot of stress on the pipes. And the resultant thing is that you get more bursts.
Okay, Andrew's first with us. Andrew, good afternoon. You're live with Gareth Patchett, the MUA's head of water.
Hi, good afternoon to you both. Please, firstly, diverting water. Why is this happening, and why are you not reducing consumption from car washes, window cleaners, other water-intensive businesses?
Okay, it's a good question. So firstly, the hosepipe ban is described in the legislation, and the legislation is the Water Act 1991. So just looking at the hard legal facts, we can only exercise the powers that we have, and the only powers that we have is to stop private use of hosepipes. So we also are in a position where we don't want to put anybody out of business. So it would be tough on people whose businesses, car washers, to have no business if we stop them, or we're able to stop them washing cars. Now, it'd be nice to think that everybody's going to be sensible. I haven't washed my car for months. I hadn't washed it before the hosepipe ban, to be honest, but that's the reason, the overriding reason we can't do that.
So yeah, the legislation doesn't allow you to basically restrict business use of water.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
And the fundamental point on that then is money talks, the environment doesn't matter. So we'll move to the second question then. Do you have any plans, please, whatsoever, to introduce water meters?
Well, I think the water meters is a big subject. I wouldn't have plans to. It would, on the Isle of Man, it would be a political decision, I feel, because there are all sorts of complications about charging mechanisms and things like that. But water meters, if I was giving my own view, I think that sometime in the next 20 years, perhaps water meters will come to the Isle of Man, because having water meters is a much more effective way of controlling use than, and also a much cheaper way of controlling use than building more reservoirs. We can't just build ourselves out of the water resource situation that we have.
So you think water meters will come?
It's just a gut feeling. I don't want anybody to run away with that as a rumour. It's just that water meters are becoming more prevalent in Europe, the UK, around the world.
And who would
and maybe
have to,
our time will come.
Gareth, who would have to make that decision? Is that Timwald or is it the MUA? I mean, is there facility for the MUA just to alter a paragraph and for water meters to be rolled out?
No, I don't think we could. I think it would have to be a political decision. I may be wrong, but I don't think that we have the powers to start putting water meters in and charging people.
Okay, and Andrew's point about restricting river levels.
I'd have to ask you again to just clarify that one for me, Andrew, if you don't mind.
Well, you're diverting water 15% from rivers, but yet you're not restricting, as you've answered the question, you're not restricting business, and basically it's money talks rather than the environment. That's the conclusion on that.
Are you restricting river flows, Gareth?
No, so what we do is we have two compensation releases, and the compensation is an industry term for water that you put into rivers to replace water that you've dammed a river, really, haven't you, with a reservoir. So we reduced the compensation flow at Sulby Reservoir. So it went down from 6.3 million gallons a day to 5.3 million gallons per day. We haven't altered the figure, the compensation release at Baldwin at all. We thought it was a sensible thing to do because we're not evil. I'm quite passionate about rivers. What we thought was, and we consulted with DEFRA about it. I'm not saying they were particularly happy about it, but we did consult with them, and they're monitoring the rivers. I haven't heard any feedback from DEFRA that there's a problem with the river. So we're still putting 5.3 million litres a day down the river at Sulby. Now, it's my view that if you make a small reduction and we manage ourselves through this situation, and it looks like we are managing ourselves through this this situation. The hosepipe ban has been the greatest benefit because it's knocked nearly 25% off our daily demand. And I think that's a more important thing for people to grasp, that the we only have so much water, it only rains so much. We share the responsibility for looking after our resources. And I thought that reducing it down a little bit, or sorry, we thought reducing it a little bit, might put off having to make more serious changes to it. And I think that was a sensible decision.
Okay.
Last question, please, if I may.
Okay.
What input did you provide to the KPMG report on providing resources for an increased population? Where is the water going to come from for all these supposedly increased new residents?
Okay, now, well, personally, I have no input into that report. There's been a lot of studies done over the years. There was a big study about population and water in 2002, and that basically told us we had enough water for 90,000 people at that time. And we're reasonably confident about that, but what that report doesn't cover is the effect of climate change. So in the last 5 years, we've had three really dry years. And so that brings into question, do we have enough water for more people? Now, we have enough water for more people, but not if we keep having dry years, because obviously, if it gets drier and drier, that would become a problem. Now, we've had a look at what the effect 20,000 people would have had in the three dry years, and we would still have been all right. But we would have been nearer to the metal. And if that continues and the weather gets drier, then it would be a problem. So what we're doing at the moment is we're looking at things that we could do to make more water available for population growth. And it's a big subject.
OK, so you personally didn't have any input into the... But did the MUA?
I don't believe so, but I might be wrong.
OK, all right. Thanks, Andrew.
Cheers now.
Thanks for calling today. Let's go to Brian's with us. Hi, Brian. You're live with Gareth Pratchett from The Water.
Thank you. Morning, Gareth. It's just a straightforward question. Out of the 21 million litres of usage each day as standard, how much will be attributed to leaks on the system?
Right. Well, it's 29 million litres.
Oh, 29, sorry.
Yeah. Right. Now, leakage is a big subject, and we could have a whole hour on leakage. I have some information about leakage. Now, the one thing that you have to understand about leakage before I even start speaking is that leakage is an estimation. So we don't really know how much water is leaking because we don't measure what ends up at our customers. So we use an industry standard calculation, which basically means that we look at the flow going into all the areas that we have on the island at the lowest flow time of day, which is about 2 o'clock in the morning. And using a formula that's used in the industry, we use that to report leakage. But it's important that that might not be leakage. It could be people using water. So, for example, when we had this runaway demand, as I talked about, we were looking for leakage, and all we were finding was sprinklers. So we weren't leaking water. People were using water, leaving sprinklers on all night. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's people, you know, the water's provided for people to use. But I just wanted to use that to clarify that leakage is, it's not just Max Utilities problem. It's everybody's problem because you know, the leaks that we find about 20% of leaks that we find are the customers' leaks. So just with that in mind, I have the latest number.
You've got an up-to-date leak report.
I have. Well, we measure it. We measure it every day.
Oh, I see. Lovely.
I wish I brought my glasses.
All right.
One thing I would say, agree with you. One way to cut down the water wastage is meter it, because we pay for everything else. We pay for our electricity and our gas, which is piped into each house. Water's piped in. If it was metered and people got a quarterly bill or an 8-week bill, they certainly would turn the taps off.
And also, Brian, if it were metered, then the MUA will be able to know how much they released to the system and how much was used by the system, so you could actually monitor what. Have you found the leaks there, Gareth?
I haven't.
Oh, all right,
I might have to come back to
Not to worry. Okay, well, thanks for that.
Appreciate that, Brian. Thanks for calling today. Gareth, if somebody spots a leak, if somebody spots a water main gushing water or just dribbling water in the street, what do they do?
Well, I just want to say I'm not avoiding the question of leaks. I'll find the answer. Somebody will text me the answer.
Okay.
Right, so leaks. It's important to differentiate between leaks and bursts. So a burst is what everybody thinks is a leak. But a burst is something that you can see. It's obvious. There's water running down the street. I've never worked anywhere in all my years in the water industry where anybody fixes bursts as fast as my team do. So credit to them. We don't leave bursts running. A lot of water companies leave them next day, next week. We don't. We fix them straight away. But leaks are the tiny little drops that are dripping from all the 100-year-old pipes that we have in the system. So the average age of our pipes is 57 years, and you can be almost certain that a lot of those pipes are leaking. But leaking isn't something that appears on the road. It's something that's soaking into the ground.
And when did plastic pipes come in?
Oh, plastic pipes came in the 80s.
Okay.
But plastic pipes are not immune from leaking.
But the metal pipes, what are the metal pipes made of?
So if you go back to the Victorian and early 1900s, they were cast iron. And more latterly, they're made of ductile iron, which is a cheaper material and a very good material. The cast iron pipes have served as well. The pipes on the prom were over 100 years old and were still in good condition. But it's just making that point that we have 2,000 kilometres of water pipes. So digging them all up isn't an option. And finding leaks is very difficult when it's a drip a metre under the ground.
Okay. Well, if anybody sees anybody working, do I get this straight? Yellow pipes are gas, blue pipes are water. Is that right?
Yeah. But we're talking plastic, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So we see that. A note in from Craig, who lives in Douglas, and just said, could you ask Gareth, why does Sunday morning water taste different to the rest of the week in Douglas?
I've got to be honest, I didn't notice that it did. So there is no technical reason. I can't think of a reason.
It doesn't get...
It's exactly the same.
Put chemicals down the pipes or anything on a Saturday night or anything.
I can honestly say we don't.
Craig, it's your taste buds. back to meters again. Old Chestnut says, Pete, two identical properties, one with four adult occupants, the other with one, yet water and sewage rates are charged at the same rate. Doesn't take Einstein to work out which property he uses the most water and produces the most sewage. So I think it's a grossly unfair system. People pay rates, not property. Well, let's put the sewage to one side. This system, and again, some people think it's unfair. The people with only one person in a house doesn't think it's unfair. I know you can't comment. Because
I can comment.
Oh, can you? By all means, do.
Yeah. So metering... So metering has been around in the UK for quite a long time. But one thing you have to remember about water and charging for water is that you have two costs. If you've got a water system, reservoirs, watering works, pipes, you have two different sorts of costs. You have costs that are related to the amount of water that you produce and send, and you have costs that are fixed costs, which are the costs in maintaining the system. And in water, the fixed cost is the biggest cost by a long, long way. So we look at something like 90%. So if everybody used half as much water tomorrow as they did today, we would still have that cost. So it's not really right to just say that, well, we'll just make the charge for water based solely on how much you use, because that would be unfair to the people that, you know, use... Well, to everybody, really, because everybody has the service. Everybody uses the pipes. The pipes cost an awful lot of money to maintain and replace. So metering would put in a small element of marginal cost, but there would still have to be a a standing charge. Okay. And that's what happens in the UK.
All right, David, you're live with Gareth Patchett from the MUA.
Hi, Gareth. Can I just ask you one question? I bought my own water meter from Qplus, a local plumbers merchant on that, and I'm hopefully going to install it in the line. But on the new estates that you're building now, and some of the modern ones are there, the valves that come in from the main are adapted to fit water meters in. So what is the policy of the water, well, Manx Utilities now, because you're all together on that. What is the policy going forward regarding that? If somebody requests a water meter and wants a water meter or puts it in themselves, how does that equate to, would you accept that? That's the main thing. Or would you be negative towards that?
Well personally, it depends what the purpose of the water meter is. If you were putting a water meter in because you wanted to look at how much water you use and find ways of saving water, I'd be delighted by that. If you came to us and said, well, I want to be charged by the cubic meter that I use, obviously that wouldn't, because that's a political... there's nothing in the Act that allows us to do that at the moment. Whether that will change, I don't know, but I have to say, David, that is a political decision.
But I know that, but really, and I'd say to Andy too, we've had that many reports when I was in government regarding the equality if you lived in the major towns to the outgoing areas, like, I'm going to say, Sulby, Blath up there, where it must cost a fortune to put the infrastructure in, but then, because of the rating system that's different around the Isle of Man, that they are getting an advantage compared to those people who live in a town and is closer to put the water to?
Well, what we do is if somebody wants to build a new development, we charge a connection fee.
Yeah,
and I think there's three levels of connection fee depending on who does what and how. But if somebody builds a new development and it's a long way off our grid, then the developer pays that cost. We don't pay that cost. We only pay the cost to put the connections in, and the developer pays for the infrastructure that goes in around the estate.
Yeah. Well, I know it's another political question. It's just a shame, really, you haven't got your political member with you one of the members there to answer these questions, Andy, that really, at the end of the day, should we be looking for an all-Ireland rate?
All right. Okay, David.
Can I just come back to David?
Yeah, of course
you did
you
ask
can.
Another question. So you mentioned about, so we've been putting in a thing called a boundary box on all new properties.
Yeah.
You probably remember, Patrick Heaton Armstrong, the former chief executive, started that. That must have been in the 90s. So putting water meters into newer properties would be very easy because those boxes are adapted. So you just screw the meter in. There is no meters in them, but that would be. And I know that since the 80s in the UK, all new properties have had meters. You know, fit
it
varies with water companies, but mostly, and that was because of worry about rating systems and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Nice to hear from you, mate.
All right. Thanks for calling today. All right. It's 12:30 on Manx Radio. We're with Gareth Patchett, the head of water at the MUA. Just a quick question in from June, who just said, "I've got a private water supply. Can I still use my hose pipe?"
Yes.
There you are, June. You're safe.
Manx Utilities are currently replacing prepayment customers' key meters with new smart electricity meters in homes in Port Erin, Port St Mary, Ballabeg and Culby. As a smarter pay-as-you-go customer, you can access our new Smarter Living app to keep an eye on your energy use in real time and to top up your credit quickly at a time that suits you. You can also top up at selected stores and via our website. To find out more about the changes, visit the Smarter Living page at manxutilities.im.
Ethel Garage in Ballasalla is more than a Nissan authorised repair centre. Their team of highly factory-trained and experienced technicians will service and repair any make and model, with dedicated aftercare too. With Athol, you get a competitive fixed-price menu and a courtesy car if needed. Pity this driver didn't know that.
Oh, great! I told you to go to Athol!
Athol, a garage to swear by, not swear at. Book now at athol.im or call the A-team, 820082.
To celebrate 40 years on the Isle of Man, Zurich will be performing 40 random acts of kindness in the community throughout the summer holidays. Keep an eye out for the Zurich team, who'll be delivering treats from flowers and coffee to donations and paid event entry throughout August. Zurich has also teamed up with Manx Radio for some of the Friday school holiday surprises. To find out where we'll be, follow Manx Radio on Facebook and stay tuned to the Nation Station. You can also keep up with all the acts by following Zurich Isle of Man on Facebook and Instagram. 40 acts of kindness from Zurich on the Isle of Man. Hashtag 40 gives 40.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com. Helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and a green future.
28 minutes before one, Gareth Patchett, the head of water at the MUA, is with us today. Hi, George, you're live with Gareth.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a simple question. The island has a population really on par with a small town in the United Kingdom. Why have we not got in place a plan B, a sanitation plant, where we can actually take the water from the Irish Sea and put it into the network?
Okay, well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to answer that one. So, desalination, I have experience of desalination plants in my past. The reason we don't have a desalination plant is that the cost of extracting and treating salt water is extremely high, possibly 100 times more than the cost of treating water from a reservoir. So desalination would be possible, but we think that there are other options that would be cheaper and better. So if you live in the Canary Islands and there's no water, they have no choice but to use desalination.
Jersey,
I'll come on to Jersey. So we speak to Jersey quite a lot. They have a desalination plant. They don't use it very often, but they use it when they have to. And the reason they have it is because they didn't have any other options. So they live on a small rock. Their only option when they run out of water is to use desalination. But we had a chat with the guy who looks after the desalination plant, and his parting words to me were, if you can do anything else but desalination, do it.
Oh, well.
Okay, George. That seems to answer that. Thanks for that. Thanks for calling, George. Good to hear from you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Another one that was actually, it was Christine who emailed in and just said, I've been told that Manx government have paid hundreds of thousands of pounds for a desalination plant on the Isle of Man. Is that true? You've not got a secret desalination plant anywhere.
Well, if it's secret, I haven't spotted it. It's worth noting that, you know, that Thames Water built a great big desalination plant on the Thames Estuary. It's not even a full desalination plant. It just treats brackish water from the Thames Estuary. I think they spent £250 million on it. They're in a drought, and their desalination plant isn't working and hasn't worked for over a year. So that's kind of highlighting it's not the magic answer.
Right. And desalination plants are powered by electricity, yes. Gas, or
electricity.
Yeah. So obviously that's the way it's got to come from.
Enormous pressures. They have to pump water through membranes that are basically so fine a filter that it filters the salt out of the water. And you need something like 60 bar of pressure to force the water through these membranes.
Okay. You found the leakage levels, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So we're currently at 6.4 litres per property per hour. That's the industry figure that's used for leakage. If we go back to 1997, we were at 12.6 litres per property.
Okay. So at the moment, 6.4 litres per hour per property. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Eddie, you're live with Gareth Patchett.
Yes. Good day, Andy. I'd just like to give you my own experiences with water meters. I lived for a while in northern Norway, and the area there that we lived in had a population and size of about the Isle of Man. And they decided that they were going to install water meters on all their properties. But it was entirely up to the occupant to do that. And you just went to the stop tap outside and you came inside your property and put the water meter there. Now, you registered with them to actually have that water meter, and they would take it from you. You would read it once a year and send them the reading. Now, when we got the bill for the first year, we were quite surprised. In fact, we were staggered because my saving on the water was at least, I was down to a third of what it was before. Now, going back to what Gareth has said before, yes, there was a standing charge. All the properties paid a standing charge as well as paying for the water. But even so, my bill was one third of what it was before. So there is, in my opinion, a definite... We're putting in smart meters for electricity so people can judge how much they're using. Why aren't we doing it for water?
The water meters would have to be an island decision, I think, and the charging mechanism would have to be an island decision. It's not a decision for me to make. I've seen it. I've worked in the industry a long time. I've lived in houses that have water meters. I see the benefits. I see the disbenefits. At the end of the day, the service has to be paid for, doesn't it? So the Isle of Man, it's almost like a social thing, isn't it? Because people who have bigger properties pay bigger water rates. And, you know, that's how it's been for quite a long time. And not maybe Andy could get somebody.
I just thought I'd give you that.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Thank you.
The benefits that we found from doing that. And it wasn't very expensive to actually put it in. It was very simple, in fact.
Okay. All right, Eddie, we appreciate that. Thanks for calling today. Who is the political member for the MUA, by the way?
Rob Callister.
Rob Callister.
Yeah.
Okay. And let's go to John with us now on Manoline. Hi, John. You're live with Gareth Patchett.
Hi, Gareth. Basically, I'm a sustainability consultant, and our company has recently built what we believe are the most energy efficient and sustainable properties on the island in Victoria Road. Mm-hmm. Basically, we don't put any water back into the sewerage. Everything is contained on the site. You know, we've got a tree root protection system, and it's all working amazingly well. I mean, our last off-peak electric energy bill was for the quarter was £70, which gives you an idea, even with the heightened cost. Now, as part of the work we've done over the years, back in 2010, we engaged with the Exeter University Third Year Energy Group that came over to do a survey on the island when they couldn't go to Greece to do their work because of the volcanic issues that were happening with volcanic dust. And one of the things they identified, the major element they came up with was putting a turbine on the Miri Veg outflow, which would have paid for itself within 2 years, which was ignored. But they also talked about putting in a higher level water storage in the mountains. I can't remember the exact details. Basically, which would have also given an option to pump water up during off-peak periods and then, you know, let it generate energy again through the through the high peak periods when the energy theoretically could be sold off island. Of course, the critical factor was that there was going to be additional stored water on the island, which would make us even more, more protected from potential droughts, which are becoming more and more likely all the time with global warming and also the energy cost rise. I mean, have you actually seen the 2010 Exeter University report?
Right across
government. I mean, I think the big problem with it was the Exeter University didn't charge anything to do it. And I mean, we've had this in the past where groups have come over and done reports on various elements of sustainable elements in the island. Right. And I've always said to them, you need to charge for it, because if the government doesn't pay for it, they don't value it.
Okay, well, let's just unpack that then, yeah, about high-level storage of water and that suggestion.
So you're a little bit off my field. You mentioned about sustainable housing. That's definitely something would be interesting because, and this isn't a criticism of the good people of the Isle of Man, and I'm one of them, but we do use an awful lot of water. So if you compared how much water we used to somebody who lives, say, in Kent, we have the luxury and we're used to using a lot of water. You know, we leave the tap on when we brush our teeth. We leave the hose pipe running when we wash the car. And I'm not We leave sprinklers on overnight to keep the lawns nice and green. And then there isn't really any incentive at all for people not to do that, is there? And I can understand people get used to this water-rich world that we live in. But we are pushing to try and get new houses made more water efficient. Rainwater collection and water-efficient appliances and things. That is something that the island is going to have to think about.
Okay.
Now, changing to the pumping the water up the hill, we have actually, again, not my field, but if you think about it, we think of the island as a big mountainous area, but it's not actually. If you look at the amount of ground that's above 200 metres, it's very small. So Sulby Reservoir itself is only 180 metres above sea level. So we don't have enormous amounts of head, and we certainly don't have anywhere where we could pump water up to let it back out again without investing in a big reservoir. But if you raise the sea level in the island to 200 metres, there wouldn't be much left peeping out, would there? And to have a hydro, you really need, lots of water and lots of head. And
okay.
We don't really have either of those things.
All right, John, final word?
Yeah, well, Exeter University at the cutting edge of sustainable development in the world. And, I mean, we lost a great opportunity to engage with them further after 2010. We haven't done that. But, I mean, the government should have some of this 2010 report. I mean, I can send you a copy if you want.
Okay.
Because I think, they did some serious investigation into this and they believed it was all viable. That you're talking about people who are now working across the world at the cutting edge of sustainability. I mean, this was 12 years ago.
Right.
Now, I followed the careers of many of these people. And, I mean, they are working literally across the world, doing some of the most, the latest and most... cutting edge sort of development in what we need to achieve if we're going to deal with global warming.
Okay, all right, John, we appreciate it. What's your email address, Gareth, by the way?
It's gareth.patchett@manxutilities.im.
Okay, all right, thanks for calling today, and let's go to Wilf is with us. Hi, Wilf, you're live with the man from the water.
That's it, very, very quick one, very easy one as far as I'm concerned. All new builds should have a plastic tank installed to take the water off the roof and then overflow into your drain, especially bungalows with gardens, because that would do all your gardens, all your car washing, and if it's a bungalow, it would even flush the toilet. You don't need special water to flush the toilet.
I'm right with you there.
Okay, well, in that case, thank you, Wilf. Let's talk about them, because they are called officially water butts. How easy is it to install a water butt? How big should you get one? And also, what's the risk of Legionella?
Well, you certainly don't want to be drinking the water from a water butt. But water butt kits are readily available. They connect into your downpipe. You may need a plumber or a builder to fit it, but they're quite clever. They work by... They know when the butt is full, they divert the water back into the drain. And like the last gentleman said, it's quite an easy way. It's an easy thing to do and an easy way to have rainwater available to water your garden.
So does the MUA recommend installing a water butt if you've got the facility to?
I don't think we specifically recommend it, but it would certainly be
It's not against the law, put it
absolutely
that way. You're not nicking
not.
Water
oh, no,
or
but
anything.
Having the water for flushing your toilet is a little bit trickier, because then you're going into your plumbing and houses only have one plumbing system, so it would be difficult to separate the water from your water butt from your toilet.
All right, we got tons and tons of calls. Thank you, Wilf. Tons of things to get to, but I just want to do very briefly, Gareth Patchett, if you'd tell me, dog muck, dog dirt around reservoirs. And walking dogs around reservoirs. What's the MUA's view on this?
We don't like dog muck around our reservoirs. In fact, we actively try to reduce it all the time. We have threatened banning dogs, haven't we, at times? It does seem to come and go. It's not nice, is it? But we have signs up. We supply free dog poo bags. But we don't want to stop people enjoying the reservoirs. And we don't want responsible dog owners to be... punished for the actions of others.
And it's always the minority. We've talked about antisocial behaviour in the past on Man in Line.
Yes.
But what is it specifically about dog muck that affects the reservoirs? I mean, can't your chemicals deal with that sort
of
stuff?
No. It's not to do with that, really. Yes, it doesn't. Nobody wants to think about that water is contaminated with dung. But actually, the water that comes into the reservoirs doesn't come from the side of the reservoirs. Some of it will run off. It's inevitable. In terms of the health, our responsibility is to reduce the risks to health as much as possible. And having dog muck in the water doesn't contribute to reducing that risk. But I can reassure you that if some dog muck does fall into the water, the water humans are well and truly capable of making the water safe to drink.
Okay, very quick answer then. This one's in from Val, who said, how short should my shower be? How long should you shower?
I think as short as you could manage. I mean, we have a camper van, so we're used to managing with short showers. So we shower ourselves, stop the water, lather up, and then rinse. It's as short as you think that you can get away with, really. It's probably not a big water user. I mentioned it before, but the biggest thing that affects us is sprinklers. A sprinkler running all night uses an astonishing amount of water.
All right, it's 13 minutes before one on Man in Light, all about water today with Gareth Patchett from the MUA. Tomorrow, the Chief Minister's on, talking about keeping the price of electricity down.
Imagine yourself on a dream holiday worth £15,000. Imagine the luxury, the views, the memories you'd make. Imagine if it only cost you £20. Rebecca House Children's Hospice are making it a reality with help from Richmond Travel. Tickets just £20 each. Get yours now from hospice.org.im/holiday by calling 672222 or from the Strand Street or Superstore Hospice shops.
From the 29th of August, Douglas Borough Council will be starting a new fortnightly garden waste collection service. You should put your garden waste bin out on the same day as your household rubbish bin. This service will complement our existing curbside recycling collection, and the Eastern Civic Amenity site will continue to provide garden waste skips. If you require a garden waste bin and are eligible, email refuse@douglas.gov.im or visit recyclenow.im. We'd also like to thank Zero Waste Man for their support.
Concerned, confused or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved, and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
On Saturday, the 17th of September, it's time to break free with Queen Radio Gaga, when Manx Radio DJ Chris Williams will create a kind of magic on the dining car. So, dress up, enjoy a three-course meal, and Queen's greatest hits. Tickets £49 per person, including food. Visit rail.im or book now on 697 457. Queen Radio Gaga, in association with your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line. Brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
With Gareth Patchett from the MUA, just a quick one before we go to the lines. This is from George, who said, have you nicked anybody yet for transgressing the housepipe ban?
No, we haven't, no, and hopefully we won't have to. We've had to remind a few people. We've had to, you know, drop a few letters into some people.
When's it going to finish, Gareth?
I have a feeling that it could finish quite soon. We need to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. As the season goes on, it gets less of a risk, really, because, you know, we expect it does. Traditionally, it always rains in autumn, so we're getting nearer to autumn.
And just an even quicker one then: how long does a lawn last without being watered?
I think lawns can last a good while without being watered. So. A cricket pitch is kept dry nearly all summer, and then they let the rain at it in the winter and it grows back. As long as the roots are not damaged, I think. I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure it lasts quite a long time.
Okay, hi Tony, you're live with Gareth Patchett.
Hi Andy, hi Gareth.
Hello.
Just a quick question, it's pretty straightforward. I understand the situation we're in, but I haven't heard any long-term plan for the future of how we're going to address the shortage of water, because it's going to get worse. It won't get better, and it's going to happen worse every year, because basically you're going to... Our chief minister says he wants to increase the population to 100,000. So basically you've got another third people living on the Isle of Man. So that's just ludicrous that we've not got a long-term plan for how we're going to gather water and how we're going to use it properly. So I can understand what you're saying about where you need to use less water. That's great. I don't like hearing all these adverts which you're paying for, which are wasting money, telling us all we've got to stop using water. You know, a hosepipe ban's a hosepipe ban. Fine. You don't need to keep reminding us every 3 minutes that, you know, we're short of water. What are you going to do? For instance, there's reservoirs around the island, one at Lurgy Thistle, which used to be used, and is no longer used. That could be hooked up to be pumped over the mountain quite easily to Solby. So think out the box and start thinking about how we're going to utilise bodies of water we have in a better way.
Okay, so, yes, thank you. There's quite a few questions in there, so I'll try to answer them quickly. So I didn't say we didn't have a plan. What I said was the plan is now having to adapt to what seems to be a growing trend in having dry summers. And we've only just really realised that we're having dry summers. And you're right, my feeling is, and it's a gut feeling only, that this could come more and more often. So what we need to do is to quickly look at, you know, how can we make more water resources available? How can we use less? How can we meet in the middle? And if the 20,000 people does come, we need to be ready for it. And you're dead right, and we are looking at it. And one of the things in looking at it is the previously abandoned reservoirs. Now, the problem with the abandoned reservoirs is that the strategy was taken in 2002 to build the two treatments, one at Douglas, one at Solby, and they're nowhere near the abandoned reservoirs. So you've got this problem of either building water treatment works where they used to be at Ballaghan and Ballure, or do you pipe them through to the new treatment works? And also you need to be really sure that it would work, because although you say they're reservoirs, they're very small reservoirs. So I don't know if you know, but if we plumbed Kringle into the system now, it would give us 3 days' worth of water. So it does need to be looked at, and using them is an option, and maybe using them is a way of closing the gap a little bit.
And what was the one you referred to, Tony? Where was it? Lurgy where?
Lurgy Thistle.
Whereabouts is that?
Above Ramsey, there's a reservoir there that runs water all the time out into the sea.
Do you mean the reservoir at Ballure then?
Yeah, well, yeah, way above Ballure. It's not actually Ballure. Ballure Bridge is Ballure.
I've got to admit, I'm not aware.
Well, if you were going round to Waterworks Bend,
yeah,
it's down to your left.
Oh, yeah. So we call that Ballure Reservoir. So okay.
Whatever you call it.
And it is a reservoir.
It's not down in Ballure.
Yeah, you're right. It's a source of water that we don't use anymore. We used to use. Yeah. But it's important to recognise it's not a big amount of water.
No, but the point is, it's more water than you've got today.
You're dead right.
And you could quite easily put that across into Solby, where your treatment's working,
and Solby
can cope with a bigger volume.
It's definitely one of the options we're looking at.
Okay, all right, Tony, we've got to dash on, but thanks for calling in today. I've got loads of calls to get to, but we're going to leave the calls for the moment because I want to come to... Block Erie, what happens at Block Erie?
Right, so Block Erie is a very small reservoir. It's almost more of an intake than a reservoir.
Is it true Block Erie was built to supply Jerby?
To be honest, Andy, I don't know. It probably was built, I think, to pipe water.
It was built in 1945.
Yes.
Now, that's hydroelectric, is that right?
Well, very complicated. So Block Erie is connected to Solby Reservoir, and in tandem, they both feed the hydro. So Block Erie is higher than Solby Reservoir. So Block Erie, when it rains, they get more power from the hydro when it's fed from Block Erie. But Block Erie is only 50 cubic metres big, so it's 50,000 cubic metres big. So it's not a great store of water, but it is still connected and it's still used.
Okay. Can we make our hydroelectric facility bigger? Have we got the water to do it?
Well, in short, no, there isn't. The the hydro uses all the available water, so we try not to overflow Sulby Reservoir, because anything that overflows is wasted energy. So that we use the hydro whenever there's available water.
Okay, that's a question for you then. As my water supply has been restricted because I can't use my hose pipe, can I get a rebate, please?
Well, it would be nice to say yes, but I'm afraid, sadly, no.
Okay. So when do you think it's going to start raining, Gareth?
Well, I've worked in the industry for 40 years, and it's never let us down.
Okay. All right. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Gareth Patchett, the head of water from Manx Utilities. Fingers crossed it's going to start raining soon, and have showers as short as you can if you want. If you want more information, by the way, what's the website there, Gareth? What's the website?
It's just manxutilities.im. And there's some good information about leakage and things that's worth reading.
And up-to-date levels of the reservoirs as well.
Up-to-date levels of the reservoirs, yes.
Thanks for being with us today. Tomorrow, the Chief Minister's on, Alfred Cannon, MHK, will be talking about keeping the price of electricity down and the future of the Isle of Man. Maybe we'll ask him about the extra 15,000 residents and what we're going to drink in the years to come. Well, how much water we're going to drink, that is, if you pardon the expression. Thanks to Barry Redfern, producing Man in Line today. Back tomorrow with the Chief Minister. W-I-N-T.